On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Gavin Riley with you here on News Talk. This is On the Record. Our hashtag on Twitter is On the Record NT. You can also tweet me at Gav Riley and the station at News Talk FM. Joined live in studio by the Minister for Climate Action, Communications and Transport, Eamon Ryan. Minister, good afternoon.
Good morning, Gavin. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much for coming in. I know it's we're all under caffeinated at this hour of the day. I was going to start with the cyber attack, and I will come to that in just a minute. But we just heard Tom reading us one of the stories that's in today's newspapers in the front page of the Irish Mail on Sunday about the prospect of there being 30,000 people at the All-Ireland hurling and football finals in August. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, I think we have to test and trial different ways of doing it through the earlier part of the summer. But by that stage, we should have a huge amount of our population vaccinated, and through the use of those trials, have kind of safe ways of having public events. Yeah.
So is it likely to follow the same manner as the English events we were hearing about, where you have to take a test in advance or to be cleared for access to the stadium, for example?
Yeah, my colleague Catherine Martin is working on this. As I said, we'll start small around the country, different types of events, obviously more outdoor than indoor is better, sporting as well as cultural. And by the end of the summer, we should have on the basis of those trials, be able to do a lot of more public events.
So would it involve still having a certain amount of social distancing, maybe a metre between people in the stadium, or how might that work?
Yeah, I think that's where you do the trials. You test to see what's the effect, what's the response in terms of what sort of numbers can you take? It all depends on what happens in terms of new variants and so on, but everything, I mean, we should be planning now to get our country back. We're on the slow, gradual, tested, safe recovery path.
We'll talk about getting the country back on track and the reopening, including to international travel, in a few minutes. But I want to talk to you first about the ongoing situation regarding the HSE cyber attack. You were telling me that you heard Paul Reid talk to us in the first hour on the programme. Where from your perspective do we stand at this point in trying to get everything back up and running? And has there been any consideration in government at all about the idea of paying the ransom to avoid a data dump?
Firstly, our focus has been in helping Paul and everyone in the health service, because that's their patients and the staff and the HSE are our first priority in getting those services back, and really throwing every resource we have to that. We were on path to doing a lot of that with the kind of recovery without the encryption key. The arrival of that helped, but there's still, as he said, several weeks of work. Now, we're starting to see services come back up now, and that'll slowly but surely happen over the next few days. But that's the first priority. Government did, like, throughout the week, we've been meeting, obviously, all of government response. We decided we're not going to pay or engage in that sort of process.
That's non-negotiable to you, is it?
No, it's for a whole variety of different reasons. I don't think it's in the interests of the Irish state. And as I said, it would divert from the focus, which is to try and protect as much information as we can here, to protect the consequences for people of any data that may be shared, and to really concentrate on that.
I understand why any government worth the name would be reluctant to line anybody's pockets. But if you're talking about the prime job here being to protect people's data, I mean, this is a group which says that unless they're given the money, or at least some of the money or some money, that by this time tomorrow, they're going to either start selling patients' details on the black market, or they're just going to do indiscriminate data dumps on the internet. I mean, if the priority is to stop that from happening,
well, first,
is there a case to be made?
First, a lot of the damage is done by what they've done and going into a network and encrypting everything, or not everything, but significant elements of data. That then, by the very fact of doing that, a lot of the damage has been done. As we can see now, even with a decryption key, it takes a huge amount of work to safely restore those networks. Mm. So a huge amount of the damage was done in the first instance. With regard to the kind of sharing of data, which is, I suppose, the second attempted extortion, yes, that's a real risk, and we can't second guess that, and we're not engaging in speculation on that, either on time or content or any aspect of it. What we are, as again Paul said, is trying to protect as best we can the Irish public in that. And I suppose the first key message to people today, anyone who's worried or anyone who does see anything suspicious or is approached by anyone suspicious, is the only thing you share the people with that with is the Garda Síochána. go to your local station, go to the guards, give them the details. That will help us build up, if there is any release of information, having a clear picture of it, a map of it. If they don't want to go to the local guard station, they can approach, use helplines and so on. But first advice, we won't share this data. The only people we share it with is the guards, and they will treat it in a confidential, secure way, and that's the best way for us to protect ourselves at this time.
On helplines, you told the Dáil on Thursday lunchtime that you were going to set up a helpline so that if people had concerns or if that they were going to receive data like that, that they would have somebody that they could pick up the phone and talk to. Then there was a HSE press conference that afternoon, and they said on the record that they knew absolutely nothing of what you were talking about.
Yeah, we are, and we're using the existing helplines, Gard. They have very good confidential helplines and very good mechanisms where people can give information, so that they're fully prepared for that.
So is the Garda confidential line, is that the hotline?
Yeah, but
1-800-666-111.
Yeah, but first advice is to go to the guards. Go to your local station, give them the detail, because they'll be prepared to take the information. They'll know what to do with it, and that, rather than sharing it, particularly online or on any other media, is the best approach.
One thing which all of this has highlighted is that although one of your many ministerial titles is that as Minister for Communications, I, and I suspect a great number of others, aren't entirely sure whether it is specifically you as the Minister of Communications who's actually in charge of cyber defence, because you could argue that it's a communications issue, you could argue that it's a justice issue, you can argue that it ought to be a defence issue. And it seems that if you ask different departments whether they are the lead agency responsible, that everyone points you somewhere else, and that nobody is entirely sure, in fact, who is responsible and who is leading the reaction to this.
It has to be all of government, because to be honest, the networks are in every government department, and critical infrastructure, critical digital infrastructure across every government
department. But who does the book stop with?
Firstly, when there's a response like this, it is with our department. We have to manage it, and we are managing it. And just to give people maybe confidence in that, like, this became apparent at the middle of the at 3:30 in the morning, Friday week last. By 6:30, our national cyber response approach, our computer security incidents response team was up and running. Taoiseach informed before 7. We had a first meeting.
So does the book stop with the Taoiseach then? Is it Taoiseach who's ultimately responsible?
Well, I'll just explain it through. We had our first meeting with ministers, myself and Minister Oisin Smith, and all our officials and all the response team, including people from the Taoiseach's department, because it has to be coordinated, by 9 o'clock Friday morning. By 10 o'clock, we have best international experts, the likes of FireEye and others, working directly with the HSE and the immediate protection response. Throughout the last week then, myself and Minister Oisin Smith have daily meetings with our national cybersecurity team, but also meetings with Minister Stephen Donnelly and Minister Heather Humphreys, because it has to be cross-government, and using the Taoiseach's department as the coordinating role in that. So that's our kind of management approach.
But the question still goes, though, as to who the buck stops with, because Oisin Smith, who you mentioned, and in fairness, he's been out quite a lot in the media this week, and he was on News Talk in the week just gone and was asked about resourcing for the National Cybersecurity Centre. And he said, but don't forget there's also the Garda cybercrime unit as well. But I've seen parliamentary questions answered by Helen McEntee only inside the last month, where she was asked about resourcing for the Garda cybercrime unit, and she said, but the National Cybersecurity Centre is the one that takes the lead on this. So everyone's pointed the finger at each other.
We do take the lead.
Does the book ultimately, in principle, not on this incident, but in the overall staffing and resourcing of the NCSC, does the book stop with you?
Yes, and that's why we issued a capacity review earlier this year, and we expect, and we are in last year's budget in the non-pay element of the department, of the National Cybersecurity Centre, we tripled the budget, recognising that there is real risks here. As is set out in the National Cybersecurity Strategy, can I just say on that, we were fortunate, I was fortunate in terms of Minister Oisin Smith joined our department recently. He also works in the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, but he has specific responsibility as well in this whole cyber area. And I think fortunate in this sense in that he has a background, he happens to have worked in IT and health infrastructure and cybersecurity, so he has real knowledge in the area. And that's why, correctly, he was out really explaining, providing information, doing a lot of the public media facing work. But behind that, there's a whole wider team, and it is a whole of government response. We put our statements out as government because it has to be a whole of government response.
I want to go to other issues, but just before I leave cybersecurity, the NCSC You mentioned the increase in its budget, but it has had no director for a little while. It doesn't have any permanent premises, and it has been lodging in UCD, but it doesn't feel like it can invest in a lot of the capital stuff because if it doesn't have a home like that, will there be an increase in all of that?
Gavin, a lot of that that was put out was not true. It's actually based in Beggar's Bush, which is the department buildings, and it is very well resourced. It has its full management team. We were
planning, have a director, though, does it?
Yeah, we were adding an additional role. I said we had a person lined up. Unfortunately, wasn't able to follow through, but we will appoint that person. But what I've seen in the last week particularly, when really they've been at the centre of a national crisis management, we are fortunate in that the calibre, the experience and the work of those people is first rate. They've really shown it and proved it in the last week, in my mind.
We mentioned the reopening of society and some of the threats of the variants. We've seen that public health report from England about the efficacy of the Pfizer and AstraZeneca vaccines against the Indian variant. The long story short is that it does very well after two doses, but it's not quite so good after one. Does that put the kibosh in any immediate travel freedom between Britain and Ireland?
We'll have to keep an eye on it, and we will, in my expectation, we're going to continue with the hotel quarantine system, but we will refine it in this. It will be really targeting those variants that are of real concern, particularly any variant that shows that may be immune to a vaccine system. It was very encouraging, that latest scientific data, as you say, shows that after two doses, particularly, the current vaccines do seem to cover that Indian variant. But we will also, and the next week will be important in this regard, what we committed to as a government before the end of May, setting out a strategy for international travel. Just as we need to start planning for the return of colleges or return to offices and so on, international travel is important. We need it for the foreign direct investment in our country, for people who haven't seen their family in years, when it's safe, and only when it's safe, to see it coming back.
Only when it's safe, though, does that mean that in the short term, no travel to Britain?
I think it will become a lot safer when the level of vaccination by the end of June is at levels that give us real protection. And the way the vaccine program's going, 300,000 doses a week being rolled out, that's going to happen sooner. Secondly, when it's safe in the sense that by the end of June, the European Union will have set up its digital certificate system for vaccination. So if someone is vaccinated, we'll have a clear, easy to use follow way of ascertaining that. And therefore, that makes travel much more safe.
On that, Leo Varadkar said on Monday that it could be 6 weeks before Ireland has that implemented after it's adopted by the EU. So that would mean no international travel before early August. Stephen Donnelly told me for Virgin Media News on Friday that it might not take 6 weeks and he would be pushing for it to be implemented quicker than that. You're the Minister for Transport, so I presume you've got a lot of skin in the game. Would you like to see it take the full 6 weeks or try and expedite it and have it in quicker?
I would try and expedite it quicker, but I think I said you do want to do it in a way that has, you know, you have real confidence around the public health aspects of it. What I've been saying for the last 2 months is that I expect it later in the summer. I think that's still the case. The exact dates in terms of whether it's end July or early August or some such time, all going well. And the benefit of that is it also gives a certain amount of time. It gives us time to see what will happen with variants, what will happen in the UK, what will happen with our own numbers, and what will happen with the vaccine program. So I expect government to be able to give an indication of those timelines at the end of this week or next week. And that will help the aviation industry because it will start planning their planning trips.
On the aviation industry, and I know that the process doesn't involve you specifically because it's a health and a foreign affairs thing, but nonetheless, I'm sure you'd have interest in it. There's a member of NEFIT who is suggesting on page 2 of the Business Post today that we should consider mandatory hotel quarantine for all travellers from Britain because of the prevalence of the Indian variant there and the fact that such a relatively small percentage of the Irish population has had the two doses and is therefore protected from it. In principle, is that something we would ever consider?
One of the biggest difficulties in this whole process in the last year has always been the fact that we have an open border with Northern Ireland and we're going to maintain an open border
with
Northern Ireland.
And from tomorrow, people from Northern Ireland can travel freely to the Republic or to Britain.
Yeah. So the idea that we could kind of seal off the UK when anyone can travel from Belfast to London without any checks and can travel in truth across the border, it's not going to provide that. What I listen to the best health advice always saying, beware of solutions that give you a false sense of security. And for us to kind of shut off an east-west connection to the UK and allow an open border with the north, that wouldn't give you protection.
But as it stands, from tomorrow, there may be very little protection because even though Irish citizens are still told not to leave the island, anyone is freely, perfectly valid and perfectly entitled to travel from Britain to the north and then come over an open border, and no one will ever stop them.
True, but one of the, I suppose, the things that's changed in the last few months is that the UK numbers have come down significantly, and they have a very advanced vaccination programme. Their incidence is similar, if not lower than ours in most areas. Mm. There is concern around issues like variants, so it's not, you know, we have to remain vigilant, but we cannot and will not seal the Irish border.
On housing, there were two cabinet meetings on Tuesday evening, and I know you can't tell us because you're officially bound for confidentiality, so you can't tell us exactly what was discussed, but it's widely reported and understood that yourself and Catherine Martin and Roger Gorman expressed concerns about not applying the newly increased stamp duty on the bulk purchase of properties to apartments. You were given an opportunity in the Dáil the following night to show the colour of your money and to vote in favour of levying that increase on apartments. Why didn't you?
Because actually, what sometimes you can do things where it doesn't, it's not always the public vote. It's actually, we've work to do now, and we've work to do with our colleagues in government in delivering the Affordable Housing Bill that Dara O'Brien has introduced, so that there's real change, real money put behind measures and real change. Within that, we also agreed at Cabinet that we would look at further amendments that strengthen the right and the important role of people in apartments to be able to own apartments, have it as your home.
But would increasing the stamp duty, as you yourself had perhaps argued for behind the Cabinet walls, not have gone a long way towards doing that?
I think the more important issue, it wasn't actually I think the more important measure where we can actually have effect is give local authorities real powers and capability to consider what's best in each area. Because every area is different. Like the circumstances in Dublin Bay South are totally different to a lot of other parts of the country. So we do need local authorities involved, in my mind, and in the planning system, and not just have everything with the strategic housing development. We take out the local authorities' responsibility. That's where I think a lot of the innovation and new measures can.
But in your constituency, for example, we're in Dublin Bay South right now. Your own constituency, and pretty much every new housing construction in this constituency is going to be apartments. And there is very little likelihood, given the affordability gap, but also now given the likelihood that international capital can come in and buy pretty much every single one of them. There's virtually no opportunity of somebody my age ever being able to buy an apartment in Dublin and to be able to own their own home inside the canals.
And we have to change that.
How?
Yeah, absolutely. We firstly change it by the state stepping in, because the market isn't going to deliver it, as you said. So give examples of practical measures, Gavin, what you can actually do. Like, you can all talk or you can actually do something. So we had a difficult choice to make. I had a difficult choice to make as Minister of Communications. We have a digital hub agency, brilliant agency, done really good work over the last 20 years, but based on just off James's Street, Thomas Street, people will know it. It's a 5+ acre site there that we haven't developed in that 20 years, always talked about, but never done. And what we decided is we need the land development agency to use that land to actually build. And what will we build? We'll build cost rental housing and we'll build affordable purchase housing so that it is actually affordable, particularly more than anywhere else. Dublin Bay South has this problem. So and like, they're my constituents. I'm fully aware, like absolutely 100%
zoned
in.
But the government's definition of what counts as affordable in that territory could still be an apartment for €450,000.
Well, firstly, it could be rental, and typically with cost rental, if the land cost is deducted because it is public land we're talking about there, you can bring the market rent down. But you can also then, how the state can intervene is use a thing called the service site fund to again similarly help with the development of the site to bring the cost down, and that helps you deliver affordable purchase. And the advantage of both those measures is that they're in the market. You know what I mean? That the same people who might be looking to rent in the market are actually going the cost rental route, so it actually brings down market rents, but it brings down purchase price.
But there will be some private developer that has to be brought on board to actually do the bricklaying and everything else. And why are they going to deliver something for less than 450,000 when that's what they're allowed to charge down the road?
Well, so just on private developers, we'll need to spend in the next 10 years about 120 billion on housing. So we're going to need private developers as well. Like, the state won't spend 120 billion housing. Like, we need to spend a lot, but it doesn't have to be the whole amount, because if we did that, then we'd have less money for transport, which we need, because you actually need high quality local communities you're building. It's not just the numbers, it's spending the money on the water system, the transport system, the local schools, local communities.
But as you say, if 120 billion has to be spent on housing construction over the next 10 years, a lot of it is going to have to be private money, and they're always going to chase whatever makes them the most money. And I just don't understand why anyone would build affordable apartments on the digital hub site for less than 450,000 when they could go across the street and charge exactly the same amount?
Well, no, because what you're doing, you're saving on the land costs, you're bringing other efficiencies by the state in, as I said, through the likes of the Service Site Fund. I think where we have a particular role is on public lands and on the Land Development Agency. So the likes of the Dublin Mental, the Central Mental Hospital out in Dundrum, to be honest, Gavin, I think we're only scratching at the surface. There's a lot of areas of public land which currently are underutilised, in my mind, are not optimised in terms of their current use. The key objective, what the Taoiseach and Tánaiste and myself have been talking about in recent weeks, is yes, we're going to absolutely prioritise. We're going to put the same cross-government approach that we've done on COVID on housing. And that means all government departments, all who have particularly access to public lands that could be utilised in this way, have a role and responsibility in saying, OK, we will be flexible here. Typically, departments are always defending, kind of don't change, don't kind of give up anything. Yeah. What we need is to get that public land using the Land Development Agency for affordable purchase and cost rental. That, I think, is a huge strategic shift and one that the Green Party will deliver in government.
But the clock is ticking on that. So when will we start to see some of the delivery?
Well, I think it started a few weeks ago with the likes of that Digital Hub Development Agency. It does take time. Like what Dave McWilliams was writing about in the Irish Times is right yesterday. Like, you know, false promise that you can, oh, we'll turn this around in a flick of a switch.
And fair enough. But if you give us a timeline which is attainable.
Do you know what the biggest problem is? Just getting the block layers. Getting the actual, it's actually what one of the things we need to do is to kind of really bring our young people to the understanding that actually there's going to be good work in this for the next 30, 40 years. We need a lot of apprenticeships going back into the key trades, plumbing, blockering, plastering, all the other trades we need. That's actually one of the things. Now that takes time because someone has to go into the trade, go into the apprenticeship, but we will deliver on this. We will not leave young people behind. We will not rely on the market. It does need state intervention and we're there to help provide it.
I'm sure that clip will be played back to you at some other point when the electorate might have their say. But for now, thank you very much for coming in to join us this lunchtime. Minister for Communications, Climate Action and Transport, Eamon Ryan.